struggle with being truly thankful today? Elizabeth Elliot says, "I'm one who is having to learn this lesson of gratitude." I think we can all relate to what Elizabeth is saying. Welcome to Gateway to Joy.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend Elizabeth Elliot talking again today about reflections of a granny. I am a grandmother, all right, not only of 8 grandchildren, but 8 step-grandchildren, with whom I have very little contact. And I have 4 surrogate grandchildren, 8 who are blood related. I thank God for all of them, and I pray for all of them. And they call me Granny. Does the name conjure up little old ladies, like the one in Beverly Hillbillies? Well, that's okay with me. When I look at some of my pictures, I figure I'm pretty close to that. And I have here a letter from a reader. She says, "Thanks for your topic of grandmothers this week," and this was written years ago. "I'm 44 years old. I have 5 sons, but grandchildren seem like only a far-flung possibility at this time. I pray about upcoming ones anyway. I knew both my grandmothers, 2 great-grandmothers, and heard stories about the other 2. They all live nearby in our community of 2,000 people. I want to tell you about my mama, Silma. She loved me. When I was a girl, I thought she was the only one that really loved me. I am the 3rd daughter, born to Mama Silma's only son and daughter-in-law. I was her 5th granddaughter. When I was born, my dad was so disappointed that I was a girl. Mama Silma went to the finest furniture store and bought a new baby bed for me and a panda bear. My older sisters were 3.5 years old and 15 months old when I was born. Mama Silma said she wanted to be sure I was loved. Mama Silma was widowed at 43 years old. She loved to have company and children over and to play games. She could make almost anything into a game. She did get angry, but she just yelled and fussed when she did. She never hit anybody. When she did something, she did it with all her might. She worked hard. Mama Silma let us drink coffee out of little tiny teacups at a little table. Mama Silma made powdered sugar toast for breakfast. She had an electric blanket and let me sleep under it with her. Mama Silma told me stories about when my daddy was a little boy. She showed me his baby book. The best thing my Mama Silma did was to be available and to give me a safe place to go. My dad is an alcoholic, and it was so good to be able to run across the field to Mama Silma's house. She also stood up to my daddy, the only person I can remember doing that." Well, I wish I had time to read the whole letter about Mama Silma, but she sounds like a wonderful granny. I also wanted to read from Stepping Heavenward. I have mentioned this wonderful book many times on this program. Stepping Heavenward was written about 100 years ago by a woman named Elizabeth Prentice. And ostensibly, it's fiction, but it is the diary of a girl from age 16 on through the rest of her life, through engagement, then a broken engagement, then marriage, then children, and the death of children. And it is just what the title tells you. It is stepping heavenward all through the difficulties, the sorrows, the pains, the joys of this woman's life. She was taking a step heavenward. And here's one entry. "I am so fascinated with Mrs. Cammell that I cannot help going to see her again and again. She seems to me like one whose conflict and dismay are all over, and who looks on other human beings with an almost divine love and pity. To look at life as she does, to feel as she does, to have such a personal love to Christ as she has, I would willingly go through every trial and sorrow." When I told her so, she smiled a little sadly. "Much as you envy me," she said, "my faith is not yet so strong that I do not shudder at the thought of a young, enthusiastic girl like you going through all I have done in order to learn a few simple lessons which God was willing to teach me sooner and without the use of a rod, if I had been ready for them." "But you are so happy now," I said. "Yes, I am happy," she replied, "and such happiness is worth all it costs. If my flesh shudders at the remembrance of what I have endured, my faith sustains God through the whole. But tell me a little more about yourself, my dear. I should so love to give you a helping hand if I might." You know, I began, dear Mrs. Campbell, that there are some trials that cannot do us any good. They only call out all there is in us that is unlovely and severe. I don't know of any such trials, she replied. Suppose you had to live with people who were perfectly uncongenial, who misunderstood you, and who were always getting into your way like stumbling blocks. If I were living with them, and they made me unhappy, I would ask God to relieve me of this trial if he thought it best. If he did not think it best, I would then try to find out the reason. He might have two reasons. One would be the good they might do me. The other, the good I might do them. But in the case I was supposing, neither party can be of the least use to the other. You forget, perhaps, the indirect good one may gain by living with uncongenial, tempting persons. First, such people do good by the very self-denial and self-control their mere presence demands. Then, they're making one's home less homelike and perfect than it would be in their absence, may help to render our real home in heaven more attractive. But suppose one cannot exercise self-control and is always flying out and flaring up, I objected. I should say that a Christian, who was always doing that, she replied gravely, was in pressing need of just the trial that God sent when he shut him up to such a life of hourly temptation. We only know ourselves and what we really are when the force of circumstances brings us out. It is very mortifying and painful to find how weak one is. That is true, but our mortifications are some of God's best physicians and do much toward healing our pride and self-conceit. Do you really think, then, that God deliberately appoints to some of his children a lot where their worst passions are excited with a desire to bring good out of this seeming evil? Why, I have always supposed the best thing that could happen to me, for instance, would be to have a home exactly to my mind, a home where all were forbearing, loving, and good-tempered, a sort of living little heaven below. If you have not such a home, my dear, are you sure it is not partly your fault? Of course it's my own fault, because I'm very quick-tempered. I want to live with good-tempered people. That is very benevolent in you, she said archly. I colored, but went on. Oh, I know I'm selfish, and therefore I want to live with those who are not so. I want to live with persons to whom I can look for an example, and who will constantly stimulate me to something higher. But if God chooses quite another lot for you, you may be sure that he sees that you need something totally different from what you want. You said just now that you would gladly go through any trial in order to attain a personal love to Christ that should become the ruling principle of your life. Now, as soon as God sees this desire in you, is he not kind? Is he not wise in appointing such trials as he knows will lead to this end? Very wise replies from a granny, from an older woman to a young girl who really does want to be holy, but thinks that she is prevented by circumstances. You know, nobody could ever be prevented by circumstances. The only thing that's going to prevent you from becoming holy is your will. Nobody in the world, nobody and nothing in heaven or earth or hell can prevent you from doing the will of God except yourself. Now I have a confession to make as a grandmother. I have not by any means measured up to my own standard for grandmothers. I'm sure I made my daughter uneasy at times early in their marriage, feeling that I could always make her life simpler by offering advice. She did things differently. I was chagrined to discover how poorly I had taught her. Couldn't she see that a thimble made mending much easier? That children can be taught to hang up clothes instead of dumping them in the laundry? My son-in-law learned an important lesson. He learned to protect his wife from me. Thank God for that. I had much to learn. I was blessed with a sweet daughter who never takes issue, often asks advice, listens, takes it graciously. But she found my visits disconcerting. Be careful. Don't get upset that grandchildren have a great many things that interest them more than their grandmother. Keep your mouth shut about haircuts, styles, music, entertainments, so different from our day. Our primary job is prayer. And here's a letter from a boy named Jason, who's 9 years old. When you talked about grandmothers, I wanted to write you about my grandpa, who was very special. He was my best friend. He did everything for me. He took me for walks, helped me learn to ride my bike, watched TV with me, but then he got cancer. Our cat Morris loved my grandpa. He died after my 6th birthday. In my room, I have pictures of him and me. After 3 years after his death, I wrote this story about my grandpa that I am sending to you. Thank you, Jason. I hope there's a grandfather listening who will ask God to show him what he can do for his grandson that boy will never forget.
As Elizabeth has said, anything if offered to God can and will become your gateway to joy. Elizabeth Elliott has been sharing timeless truth with ladies for many years, drawing insight from her Bible study and her experiences as a wife, mother, and missionary. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network, Charlotte, North Carolina.